Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Good day. Welcome to Orange County Talk Radio. I'm John Marino. We are produced by Shark Creative, made possible by Robeson Oil, the house that service built, by Tompkins Mayopac Bank, by Lipolis Electric. Don't be left in the dark. Get Lipolis, by Hightower Westchester, managing your wealth to a fiduciary standard throughout the Hudson Valley, by White Plains Hospital, and by Michael Labriola, landscape design and construction of Armonk down in Westchester. They cover the entire Hudson Valley as well. We are joined here on Orange County Talk Radio by County Executive Steve Newhouse. Steve, welcome back, first of all. And secondly, since we last spoke, Governor Andrew Cuomo became no more. Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul has stepped in. Have you worked with the Lieutenant Governor, now Governor, in any capacity through the years that she's been in office?
Well, great to see you, John. And actually, I have worked with her on a couple occasions. She was here recently when we did a dedication to the newly expanded Purple Heart Hall of Honor over in New Windsor. And she's been here numerous times. Definitely has a different style and personality about her than the former Governor Cuomo. We're looking forward to it. Yesterday, I was up in Syracuse with my peers. I'm on the board for NYSAC, New York State Association of Counties. And we are optimistic with her being in charge that we have a more working, close relationship.
Mm-hmm. How does she seem to be handling her duties so far? And I know it's not an easy transition.
Yeah. So look, it's relatively easy. It's relatively early for her to make a lot of judgment, but let's just talk about one of the biggest things that she did right off the bat. She has required all students, all staff, faculty, and schools to wear masks. That's a tough call. I will tell you, as a county that has a number of school districts, we would do these podcasts with the school superintendents. Whether people like that decision or not, she made their job easier, because it was like I had school districts that said it's parents' choice. Other school districts that said masks all the time, everywhere. And having a universal policy does at least make it user-friendly. And I know it's not what everybody wants to hear. So that was a tough call for her to do, but I think she's listening to public health experts on saying, this is what we think you need to do. And it's kind of hard for her to ignore that.
As a county executive, how do you mediate all those different sides and branches of education? Masks, no masks, remote learning, in class, hybrid, et cetera. How do you manage all of that?
You know, this is a chain of command system. Some of my county executive colleagues don't like to hear that. I'm a military guy. And the governor does have powers. And when she or he makes an executive order, that's it. So we had school districts leading up into her taking office. I said, look, I'm telling you, we have had communications with her, and she's been pretty clear publicly that she is going to make a mask mandate. So you guys debating about this is really futile, because she's going to come in and trump you by using her executive power. So as a county executive, I have a ton of leeway locally on how I can run the county and how I can influence that on businesses. I've been pretty standing back on this for the most part. We have a lot of businesses, like, let's say, Legoland, huge entertainment, lots of crowds. They made their own protocols on how to keep people safe. So unless I identify a problem that I need to get involved in, we have a lot of outdoor concerts, a lot of outdoor events coming up still into the fall. If they become a problem, I will weigh in. And in addition to that, my Department of Health will weigh in and give them some suggestions. So right now, we've gotten a ton of cooperation. I know 100% of the people are not satisfied, but, you know, I got four kids. Guess what, John? They're all going to school. They're all wearing masks. They're doing okay. They're doing a lot better than I am with it. I fly every month out west for the military. And frankly, it's not an enjoyable experience to sit on a plane for 5 or 10 hours to have a mask on. But the kids in school are doing a lot better than I think the adults are.
Mm-hmm. How about most schools around the county? What is the educational process right now in that as we try to walk a fine line between a hybrid model or totally remote or everybody just totally back in class?
They're back in. They are back in. Even the private schools are back in physically, and it's working. And I got to tell you, my kids have not been to school since the beginning of this. So this back in March of 2020, and they've done okay, but they need to be back in school. They need to be in front of a teacher. They need to be able to get that personal attention. They need to also be able to have friends and see what their friends and interact with their peers. So I will tell you, one part of it, John, is obviously it's in relation to COVID. When I start seeing problems related to kids going back to school and how that's dealing with COVID, is it increasing the numbers? We haven't seen that yet. We've seen a little blips in the radar. One team gets exposed or a high school team and they have to quarantine, but nothing catastrophic that has disrupted a lot of schools. The more disruptive thing that we see is the lack of employees in buses, which is a nationwide crisis. You saw it on CNN and Fox this morning, nationwide shortage in bus drivers. And that has impacted, you know, my daughter was 2 hours late to get home last week. My wife was starting to panic. So I get that. So I think one of the things we need to emphasize is that we all have to be a little bit more flexible. You know, we're getting back into the groove of something that we really weren't doing 100% last year.
What are the reasons for that shortage in buses?
I think predominantly that they've been giving too many lucrative unemployment benefits to people that frankly could have gone back to work. We had a business in Orange County that employed 100 people. They closed for 6 months. They opened back up in January of this year. And they said, all right, everybody come back. 50 out of the 100 employees continued to stay on unemployment. And it forced that company to not only hire new people, but also continuing to pay a portion of those 50 folks that didn't want to come back their unemployment. And it was hyper impacted because the federal money, which ended on, I believe, September 5th. Once that ended, we're starting to already see in the job market people applying for jobs and getting back to work. So I think that is something that could have been adjusted. You know, that's coulda, shoulda, woulda, going back in time. But we have now left that September deadline. And I think you'll see that job market continue to improve.
How much of a concern is COVID around the county still?
It's a concern because, you know, in the last 24 hours, I had three people die. One in their 50s, one in their 60s, one in their 70s. So it is not flooding the hospitals, but it is taxing the hospital's resources. It is not shutting down businesses left and right, but it's impacting people. The three people last 24 hours, I had two people die before that, a few days before that. So those deaths are nothing to ignore and take lightly. So most of them are unvaccinated. I'm not trying to push people for vaccination or not, but we are heading into a crucible in this country, but the vaccination requirements for healthcare workers. There's a temporary stay for them as well as nursing home employees, but I'm also a military officer in the reserves. There's a deadline in the military that if you don't get vaccinated, you're out. So these are untested waters. I get vaccinated every year for the military for the flu virus. The COVID vaccine is a little bit different, and it's not something in people's that they're used to doing for this particular virus. And it's also, we're seeing less than 10% in hospitals that are unvaccinated, their staff. We're seeing about 15 to 20% of nursing home employees still not vaccinated. Now, in the next few weeks, when that deadline approaches, they're supposed to be getting pink slips.
Right.
So what that has had an impact on is that hospitals are going to stop doing and scheduling elective surgeries in anticipation of a reduced staff. Nursing homes, including the one that the county has, I have 18 in Orange County. The county runs one. We've stopped taking in new patients. So that's going to equal some type of negative impact on healthcare, on you, God forbid, trying to put your mom or dad into a nursing home, or we have a dementia ward. We're not going to be able to take as many patients that actually need care. So they might be stuck at home or have to go somewhere farther away that has a vacancy. And then, you know, elective surgeries ultimately equal something that can get to something serious. You know, you don't want to put them off too. So it was a very lively, we have 62 counties in the state. I'm on the board of directors for NYSAC, New York State Association of Counties. It was a very lively and concerned comments that came from around New York State. You see hospitals up in the Western Tier that are going to stop doing baby deliveries. Dutchess County, a hospital there, just announced they're going to stop doing baby deliveries. That has an impact on healthcare.
That leads me to the question of schools. You have teachers around the country who say, I can't go back to class because it's unsafe. Okay, get a vaccine. Well, I'm not going to do that. Or healthcare workers, as you talked about locally here in Orange County and all around the area. Well, I can't go back to work, or I have to work a certain way because it's unsafe. Okay, get a vaccine. It's there. It's available. Well, I won't do that. How do we manage this now? Because when I see something like that, I understand the concern. I would have the same concerns. But if I were offered the vaccine to get back to work and I said no, that would, I don't think, reflect well upon me. It would make me look like I don't want to work.
It's got pluses and minuses on both sides. During the height of the pandemic, I had teachers that were petrified to go back. They're 50 years old. They're seeing people get sick. There wasn't a vaccine. Now that we have a vaccine out, people are still hesitant. I get it. The politicians, in my opinion, we have a real lack of leadership on many levels in American society right now, and very divisive mainstream media. And that has contributed to this confusion and polarization, including on a health topic like COVID. So I understand that a decision has to be made. We have to continue. We have to move out of this somewhere. And what the government officials have done is picked low-hanging fruit. School teachers are low-hanging fruit. They work for the government. Hospitals are funded predominantly by a bunch of things, including funds from the government. So they're able to push these mandates on to say, that's why you're seeing nurses, senior home workers, as well as teachers getting mandated. The military, right? You're out if you don't get vaccinated. And now, there are some challenges, and it'll be interesting if this holds up in court. Many attorneys tell me they think it is, because we are forced to get vaccinated at other levels, but it definitely impacts things. But we keep going into this round robin. We're in phase three or four, depending on which one you counted. And to put it in perspective, John, a year ago, Labor Day, I had just about 150 cases, and we had no vaccine. I'm looking at 1,200 cases today, and we have a vaccine.
So how could that be?
It's because the virus has now mutated to this Delta, and now you're seeing coming from South America this new Mu variant. And this is a huge, complicated issue. So if you look at it, the United Nations have told President Biden, forget about giving Americans boosters or third shots. Give all your inventory to the poor countries in South America, Africa, and Asia that don't have vaccines to stop them from having all these mutations. You can protect Americans all you want, but these mutations are going to continue to come over and be a problem. So that's why this is really bigger than a town, bigger than a county, and in many ways bigger than a state. That's why you have these real nationwide debates. You have governors fighting with the president on directives or fighting with each other. But there are some things that we can do basically to help each other. You know, I don't push people to get vaccinated. I got vaccinated, but I will tell you, the three people that died in the last 24 hours were not vaccinated. Uh-huh. I know that there are people.
No mandate then at that point, even though you won't push anybody. Might it be simple, the way you said Governor Hochul made masks simple? Might it be simple just to have that overall vaccine mandate? And you have to do it. That's simple.
I think wearing a mask is a lot easier mandate, something you can mandate, than having somebody get vaccinated. You know, I had a couple people from in our area that did not get vaccinated, but their business required testing when you come in. And sure enough, three people tested positive. So that system worked. Same thing. There are people out there, by the way, that cannot get vaccinated, that have certain health issues that prevent them from getting vaccinated.
I know a couple, and they have their letter from their doctor that says that too, no vaccination for me.
And some of them, and many of them, live in fear because they really have no protection. So there are those cases out there too. Does that mean that you don't let them come to work as a teacher? No, but that teacher will be probably hyper protected. You know, you might be seeing some people wear two masks, and I hate to say it, that's just the way some things work.
You alluded to the World Health Organization and people on the other side of the world with the way they think about vaccines, that give it to the other part of the world first before we give Americans a third booster shot. Is that a real working kind of philosophy? Maybe we could look at it like, well, if you protect people around the world and stop new variants from emerging, we are protecting Americans at the same time.
Yeah, it's a great debate out there. But if you remember, John, I was banging out 2,000 to 3,000 vaccinations a day at my clinics right here. I ran a military operation here. I don't think that many places around the country were as efficient as our team here. But it started to die. You know, May, June, we couldn't get rid of the stuff. Then I remember we had knockdown, drag out fights with the previous governor that he was giving vaccines to friends rather than us, you know, because there was never enough to go around, you know. You know, everybody wanted some and they didn't have enough to give around. So it led to these internal fights. But then came May and June, and we had such a stockpile, we gave it all back. And a large portion of those vaccines were sent overseas to our allies and people that need it. The United States did that. And now we're at a point where there's other countries, third world countries, that have, you know, 5% vaccination rate. You remember, even a high tech company in a highly civilized country like Japan that hosted the Olympics, during the Olympics, less than 20% of their population was vaccinated. And that's a leading country. So there is an argument out there that you want to like get everybody together because you don't want these variants. And we've said this off and on. Imagine if the nursing home deaths were horrible. They killed elderly people. That's where predominantly most of the people that died were elderly in my community around the country. Nursing homes were a third of them in particular. But imagine if they killed kids like that and didn't kill adults. Our society was already shut down. Let me tell you, it would really shut down if it started killing kids. So that is some of the fears out there, that if this thing continues to mutate, you see the Delta variant is sending some kids, not a lot, but some kids to the hospital. They never went to the hospital, as far as I knew, in the first 6 months of the original COVID-19. So that's why you have that argument there. And I'm not trying to argue either way. I'm just trying to do what you do. Just give the facts. So there are there's two sides to these discussions, and we just need to listen and then make a judgment call, make a command decision, and move forward.
I remember in the early days of the vaccine, the now departed Governor Cuomo had a mandate for places that gave those vaccines out, that if you did it in a manner, if you had extra at the end of the day and you just started to dole them out to people who happened to walk in or walk by, or you call your friends to come in, give them a shot, you could get fined up to $1 million. And I found that just from a vaccine hesitancy standpoint, too. I would think, well, if I have to get a vaccine, but they don't want me to get a vaccine when I can, then what's the point?
Yeah, it was kind of asinine, that ruling. And I'll tell you why. So early on, when we started giving out the vaccine, these things all had a shelf life. So some of the stuff not only has a shelf life in the refrigerator, but when you take some of these out in anticipation of people coming, and then you have stuff left over, the last thing you want to do is waste any doses. So what I would do is, thank God I run emergency management for the county, we would get on 911. Any police officer out on the road right now that's not handling a scene or a crime or a car accident, come and get vaccinated. That lasted for a couple of weeks. Then what I started to do is, at the end of the night, if I had leftovers, and by the way, what I'm just telling you on it, John, I could care less if the governor was going to fine me on it. I would go fine me on not wasting doses. So one of the other things, we would go to pharmacy stores, and I have some loudmouth people that work for me that can, you know, anybody in the store right now that wants a vaccine, drop your stuff right now and come to Hatfield Lane. And people would just run out. It was like the Pied Piper of COVID vaccines. Uh-huh. And it worked.
Steve Newhouse, County Executive, Orange County, Orange County Talk Radio. I'm John Marino. Steve Newhouse, we are heading towards the end of 2021, final portion, final quarter of the year. That means it's budget time for 2022. Right now, what does the new budget look like?
So we're looking at about an $830 million budget. It's a big county. We're close to a $1 billion budget. We have 400,000 people in the county, and we just reached that threshold at the census. The tax rate, now I'm up for re-election again, so public notice, running unopposed. So this is not a political commercial.
Right.
So my budget is a lower tax rate than before, and it's a reflection on not only a good team that I have here, but the health of Orange County. We are strong. We have big commercial stuff coming in. We have residential market is exploding. So the value of my county is growing. As that value grows, it also helps the income that helps pay for government. So Legoland, for instance, I mean, it's almost sold out for the next couple months. You have to make reservations to go there. And then you also have new projects that are going underway, like Amazon has built now a number of facilities here. And there's other stuff, small businesses back opening. It's hard to get you have to get reservations for restaurants you never had to in the past. So as we start to open up again, even in a cautious way with COVID, the economy is rolling back. I'll give you one other example, John. I'm up about 25%. In sales tax this year to last year. Now, last year was apocalyptic, but it just shows you that's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. As we move along into the autumn also, too, the storm season began quite a bit early for us here in the Northeast. Henri, Ida, so far, generally the storms we get, the big ones, come late October, even into early November. You are the head of the emergency management preparedness in the county. Are we ready to go if and when the next one hits? I think it's a matter of when, not if.
Absolutely. I mean, we had two really big knockout, drag out tropical storms within pretty much a week of each other. Emergency management's my baby. It's my military experience and the people I surround myself with here, ex state troopers, ex fire, EMTs. So, and we did an air show. We had 10,000 one day and 11,000 people the next day. Huge events, outdoor events that could, and you're involving everything that could, you know, fighter jets and large crowds, COVID going on. So we're experienced with these things. Now, I do get concerned about them because sometimes you get overwhelmed. You know, you saw what happened in New York City. So we keep a very tight pulse on this, very good relationship with the utilities. You know, we send in extra people. We start standing up the Emergency Operations Center, which has some of these experts in there with us. We have the utilities embedded in the 911 center, so they can immediately answer problems that are coming up on the 911 floor from callers in the public.
Mm-hmm. What can residents around the county do to maybe help with the next storm, to maybe be in a better position to deal with things?
Great.
I'm going to give you an example right here in this house here, in this studio here. I had $20,000 worth of damage during the last storm a couple of
months.
What maybe could I have done better to prevent that or to lessen the blow?
So a lot of things. So let me just do two things. One is if you go to orangecountygov.com and you hit our emergency management tab, there is a whole booklet called Are You Prepared? Are You Prepared? And it talks about anything from checking your flashlight batteries to making sure sump pumps leaking, flooding in the area, a lot of stuff like that. And one of the other things is if you're aware of your environment, and these 100-year storms seem to be happening every 5 years now or even sooner. So you want to be engaged with your local community, your local town, village, city. So I was up at Syracuse, I told you, last few days with my county executive, but we had representatives from FEMA and the DEC there. And I have to advocate for you, John, and your county executive should be advocating for not only the town or the county to get reimbursed or help for bridges that need to be redone or how to mitigate excessive water when it floods, but they can also advocate and secure funding for the private sector, for residents and for businesses. And it took a lot of jockeying, and we're still negotiating some stuff right now, but we had businesses that lost $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. You said $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't qualify, and their insurance doesn't carry them, that business could go under, or that comes out of their, they're already struggling finances. So you need to really engage your local government and say, look, I know you're looking at your bridge to get fixed, Mr. Newhouse, but you know what? I had my whole neighborhood was washed out. Or you know what? My whole manufacturing facility, we can't open it up unless we get help. So that is very important. And your emergency management office in each county in Hudson Valley should be spearheading that.
Mm-hmm. Now,
in Orange County, Dominic Green is the guy that does it in my emergency management office. He's been doing it for 25 years. He knows how to get FEMA reimbursements.
And all the info is online to get in touch with him, too.
Yes, sir.
Alan, when you can do it and where you can do it, too, obviously.
And if anybody doesn't get an answer from any of these places, go where the buck stops here with their county executive or with their mayor supervisor.
So call the county executive or call your mayor, supervisor, village official, et cetera. Go right to the source if you need help. Yep. By the way, the rent eviction moratorium, that seems like that's been going on forever. Seems like a good thing, regardless of what the courts decide and what the president decided to do, helps people out. And yet we look and we see under Governor Cuomo, all the money given to New York State for renters, for landlords, for small businesses, et cetera. Only a portion of that was given out. The new governor seems like she wants to make right with that. How could this possibly be from Albany, knowing what people need around the state and that money sitting there in a bank account in Albany?
I think the trouble that the governor got into impacted that when he kind of like sat on stuff like an egg. And that money is available. You know, that money was available to both, like you said, renters and landlords. I sympathize with both sides. I sympathize with a renter that was not brought back to work. Last week, I spent some time meeting with Mayor de Blasio and from New York City. I had a county executive from Albany County, Dan McCoy. 30,000 restaurants went under in New York City in the last 18 months.
Right.
What do you do with those people? What do you do with the people that work there, the single mom that's a waitress at that place? And obviously in Orange County, they had different situations similar to that. What do you do with the landlord or the restaurant owner that was renting that place and no longer has something to put in there? And then what is the property owner, the landlord himself or her, how do they pay utilities? How do they recoup what they've lost there? So that help from the federal stimulus, whether people agreed with the stimulus or not, was made available through the state. And I think that Governor Huckel just has to open the spigot and make sure these claims are legit and then give people what they need to survive.
Is the state in danger of losing this money by the end of September if it's not used? We've heard that. Can the Fed say, okay, we know the situation, what you went through, let's extend that for you?
I think they're going to give Kathy Huckel, the new governor, a little bit of breathing room because she's just getting her hands on the control switch. And, you know, I think that the last 6 months where the governor was embroiled with all sorts of controversy, a lot of these things were falling to the wayside. And you also know that senior staff for him were either abandoning ship or doing damage control on his political career to try to keep their jobs. So a lot of this important stuff was impacted from it. So now with a new commander in the governor's mansion, I think they got to give her a little bit of breathing room to get this stuff squared away. But I do think that she needs to make good on that.
Running opposed for re-election, you'll be in office in 2022. As you look ahead next 4 years, what's the game plan?
So, you know, obviously, I would love to not mention anything about COVID, but I'm hoping we're getting out of this nightmare. So, when you talk about emergency preparedness, you know, I had to restock all my stockpiles of masks, cleaners, and gowns. You know, we were the principal provider of gowns for nursing homes and sometimes hospitals during the height of this. So I need to be prepared if there is some type of emergency like that. But when you look about the future of the county, Moody's is an independent rater. They rate the county's strength. And they've given us really flying colors, our not only where we are, but our potential going forward. So when you have parks like Legoland that just opened, being successful, major places doing expansions, we're looking at a dinosaur park, an interactive dinosaur park. that's going through the planning process in the town of Walk Hill. There's a lot of positive things going on. So I am optimistic and I am excited about the future. And again, this is coming from a guy that's running unopposed. These are the most dangerous politicians because they can tell you exactly what's going on rather than what you need to hear to get elected. So I got four kids. Like I said, they're back at school. Yeah, school's a little different, but I am very happy today. And I ask them every day how they are. How was your day at school? What'd you do? They are all coming back excited. So those are good steps, John, coming from where we were. So we have festivals, events. The German festival at Hunter Mountain's been canceled. We're doing it now in Orange County. Many festivals across the Hudson Valley that were canceled last year, we're doing them. Rock concerts are happening here. Stone Temple Pilots, one of your favorites, John. I know that they're going to be here in a couple of weeks. So I'm excited about it. I'm optimistic. And again, we still have some bumps in the road, but we are heading out of the woods.
Maybe we could have a Woodstock 2022 in Orange County.
We almost did. You know, they have a farm in Wayweyanda that has tried to do concerts the last couple of years. They just, for some reason, pick it on a day where it's like monsoon rains. And they had Adamus Pyle. You remember him? He was a drummer for Lynyrd Skynyrd. He came and played. It was great. I got to meet him, but it was kind of rained out. So it'll happen. And if they want to do it here, I am open for business to let that happen.
Steve Newhouse, County Executive, Orange County, here on Orange County Talk Radio. Great to have you back with us. Let's talk again soon. And all the best in your next administration.
Thank you very much, John. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Steve Newhouse, here in Orange County Talk Radio. I'm John Marino, produced by Shark Creative, made possible by Compkins Meripack, banked by Robeson Oil, the house that service built by Lipolis Electric. Don't be left in the dark. Get Lipolis by Hightower Westchester, managing your wealth to a fiduciary standard right through the Hudson Valley. Also by White Plains Hospital, by Michael Abriola Landscape Design and Construction of R. Monk. They work all around, up and down the lower and mid Hudson Valley and beyond. Catch all of our Orange, Dutchess, Westchester, Rockland, Putnam, and Fairfield County Talk Radio programming on our YouTube channel, Shark Creative YouTube.
You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio,
powered by Shark Media, a division of Shark Creative,
and made possible by Entergy Indian Point Energy Center.
Visit SafeSecureVinyl.com.